Look through the window of the original Joe's on North Beach and you'll see two guys at the counter talking ball. Time for you to listen in to their conversation. Marty Lurie and the SF Chronicle's Bruce Jenkins are looking through the window of baseball. Sponsored by Original Joe's of North Beach and Westlake on KNBR 680, the sports leader.
Boy, what a week of baseball as we're just getting into the heart of the season now. And since June 1st, the Giants are the fourth best team in the National League. And June, July, August, September, a lot of baseball, a lot of things can happen. The Red Sox obtained Andrew Cashner today from the Orioles. So their bullpen is a mess. Their pitching is a mess, but they're starting to win some games. So the Red Sox get this little trade thing going right now. Joining us, Bruce Jenkins. Bruce, how are you?
Good. Reeling from the amazing experience watching what happened in Anaheim last night.
Oh, good.
The Tyler Skaggs tribute. I mean, that's one of the most amazing, emotional, unbelievable nights in the history of the game, really. I mean, the way that it all unfolded is just, it's so magical and heartbreaking and everything else you could say.
Well, we had Jose Mota on, and Jeff Fletcher was just on with us, and, you know, talking about it. And, you know, look, you're a Hollywood guy. You know, your father was a big guy in Hollywood, Frank Sinatra and everything. You couldn't have written a script like this.
No, and Trout actually said that. I mean, first of all, you know, his mom, who was a terrific softball player, gets out there, and, you know, she's got to be just torn up inside, but she fires a perfect strike. I mean, it's like the best first pitch ever thrown, right exactly where she would have wanted to put it, you know, with something on it. So everybody's going, oh, my God. And then, you know, Trout, of course, you know, he'd be the guy you want to set the tone. He hit the first pitch he sees. He hits 454 feet. Gets two more doubles on the night. And then two guys who you barely heard of, who still have ERAs in the fours, pitch a no-hitter. I mean, come on. And they were all wearing 45 jerseys. They all took them off at the end and spread them carefully around the mound. I mean, it was just such a moving tribute. And I mean, it was really perfection, and you couldn't have scripted it.
No, I said to Jeff, I said, well, maybe, you know, it's sort of on the level of the Lou Gehrig speech a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, it reminded me of when Jose Fernandez died. Yeah. 3 years ago, the first game they had at the Marlins Park, D. Gordon led off with a home run, which is something he never does, but right. He wanted to do it then, and he was, you know, crying as he rounded the bases. I mean, these things, you never forget them. Yeah, Lou, of course, Lou Gehrig's is definitely right up there. I've seen recently some video with extended audio of his speech, not just the part that became famous, and that was, Gehrig didn't have any script. He had nothing written down. He didn't even want to do it, but they said, well, you know, you really should, and that's what he came up with.
Yeah, I said, I'm the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
Which is the best part for me. I love hearing. Yeah. Leonard Coppa used to say that to me all the time.
Yeah, he was a New Yorker, went to Columbia, Gehrig.
Yeah, no, it was great. Yeah. The other part of the whole thing last night, I'm glad that Bruce and I can talk about this, is Mike Trout. And look, he's the best player in baseball. He's Mickey Mantle in many ways, but he's not in New York. And for the life of me, I can't tell you a signature moment that he had. You know, say, boy, what a home run that won this or the catch. Last night, he did something that I'll remember forever, and that is hitting the home run, a double in the first inning, driving in six runs, and sort of being the man that stood up and said the things that he had to say from his heart about Tyler Skaggs, who's one of his best friends. To me, that was his signature moment. I think forever Mike Trout is now on the map, so to speak. Not that he wasn't before, but it just gave him some sort of big-time celebrity status.
Yeah, he's such a humble guy who doesn't really like, you know, the spotlight. I mean, he appreciates everything that's said about him, but he kind of all rolls off his back. He's a real sort of natural, down-to-earth guy. But because it was about somebody else, I think, you know, first of all, it motivated him to speak so eloquently about Skaggs and what it meant to the team and everything, and the fact that he hit that home run in Skaggs' honor, it's a bomb. I mean, he's not really a first pitch guy, but he went after that one because he just felt it. You know, that's what he had to do. And then two doubles the whole night. He set the tone. And yeah, that's you're right. That's gonna that's going to do wonders for a reputation that really didn't need enhancing. But, you know, and when you stack him up against, you know, people like, you know, Kevin Durant and Tom Brady and, you know, guys who get more attention than they ever would want almost, it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and the kid played third base, a former catcher. I think it was his fourth big league game or something. And he made a play at third base. It looked like Mike Schmidt. It looked like Elastic Man. It looked like his arm went like 6 feet to get a ground ball to throw somebody out.
Yeah, it's like everybody on the team stepped up in one way or another for this, you know. And I'm sure Debbie, the mom, will never forget how that all unfolded, and we'll never forget how she fired that ball right down the middle.
Yeah, I'm glad we could talk about it. I'm glad that you got to see it. To me, it was just amazing reading the story and watching the clips of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Jim Bouton passed away this week. And I have about an 8-minute interview that I'm going to try to get on today in our next segment a little bit if we have time. But Jim Bouton, Ball 4, came at a time when sports writing had changed quite a bit. The writers no longer sort of protected the players, and Jim Bouton went behind the curtain and was forever known for it. But he was a heck of a pitcher, too.
Well, yeah, he really was. I mentioned in my column that I was fortunate enough to go to actually games 3 and 4 of the 1963 World Series at Dodger Stadium. It was when the Dodgers swept them. But in game 3, Bouton, who had won 21 games for the Yankees that year with a 2.53 ERA and a blazing fastball. He was a hell of a pitcher that year. I think he had one more good year after that, and that was about it. But he's out there with his hat flying off, dueling Don Drysdale pitch for pitch, 1-0 game. I just always put that at the top of my list for pitching duels, I guess, until I saw Morris and Smoltz at the Metrodome, but and several others. But I saw that was probably the greatest moment of his life, even though they didn't win. He was on the stage. He was awesome. And, his arm, he wound up being a knuckleball pitcher trying to survive. But a really interesting guy in so many ways.
He beat the Giants with the knuckleball. I have this little 8-minute interview with him that we talk about that, coming back in his baseball career. Then, of course, Ball 4, the book, and he talks a lot about Joe Schultz.
Joe Schultz, his
picture
words became mine shortly after that book, and my friends and I would always exchange. It's not for for young audiences, I guess, but it was pretty classic.
No, the best when Joe Schultz would come out to the mound, he'd say, "And I want you to zits him." Zit? What does that mean? So, yeah, I'm going to try to get that on today. Henry's going to come on the top of the hour. Maybe in the next segment we could get that on.
Good.
But what do you think of the collision at the plate with Luke Roy and Marisnik?
Well, you know, by instituting the new rule about sliding, we've come to really appreciate how great that rule is, how we don't miss these insane collisions that you sort of have to do. You have to hang in there. You have to collide into the guy, meanwhile putting yourself at risk when you're probably not going to change the outcome of the play. And we've come to enjoy the beauty of the slide, the wide of the plate slide where you're just showing a hand, because that's open to players now, and that's how it should be. And all of a sudden here you've got Luke Roy, to catch that ball, put himself a little bit in harm's way, but Marisnik made the terrible mistake of choosing the inside route, yeah, which is a ticket to disaster. He really had nowhere to go, but he really should have tried to pull off a miracle and get through there on the outside. But the way that he came in and forced a collision, it was just wrong, and he should have been suspended. I'm sure I know he feels bad about it. You can tell how he reacted right away, but what you take away from it is that you see it, you almost never see it now, and that's why that rule is so effective.
Yeah, he changed direction, which was until, and they slow it down, and you could see he had, in his mind, and Kevin Franson talked about it this week, listening to him from a ballplayer's perspective, that you have that split-second decision of what to do,
mm-hmm,
and you're trained to score a run. From Little League, that's what you're trained to do. But life is different today. And he did make that decision to veer into Luke Roy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his undoing at that point. And that's what you can't do.
Yeah, it's probably an old instinct, the way the previous rules existed, to try to make something happen forcefully. But that's not doesn't work anymore.
All right. The Atlantic League. This I love. you know, what they're doing in the Atlantic League. Of course, they're using the computerized strike zone. They did it for their All-Star game. But they also have another rule. This is the independent league, the Long Island Ducks, and they're experimenting all sorts of things, that if the catcher doesn't catch a ball cleanly, you can steal first base.
Yeah, I read that. I can't even hear that. I mean, that's completely. That's so ridiculous. It's beyond belief. I mean, what was it actually a foul tip? And you didn't actually steal first base there. Come on back. Yeah, you might as well start running backwards around the bases like Jim Pearsall.
Well, I saw this. I said, now we're getting a little far afield, but it reminded me of Germany Schaefer. Remember Germany Schaefer, Bruce?
I know the name. Yeah. I'm not certain exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, very, very quickly, because we're going to take a break. You can come back after the break, but all right, let's take a break right now. Right, Josh? All right, stick around, Bruce. I'm going to tell you the story of Germany Schaefer when we come. The man who stole first base. I'll tell you that when we come back. All right,
okay.
Right after this. Okay. All right, nice to have you back with us. Bruce Jenkins still joining us as we look through the window of baseball. All right, Bruce, Germany Schaefer, the man who stole first base.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The only thing I remember about him is that this is so classic of the nicknames of the early 20th century. He I forget his name, but he was a son of German immigrants, so he became known as Germany.
That's right. And then when the war broke out, he had to be called something else. So... But that was
they called him Holland during the war.
Right. They called him late for dinner.
Yeah.
All right. So here's what happened. So when he played in the early 1900s, the favorite play was the runner on first and third. The runner on first, as we see today, would break for second. The throw would come to second, and then the runner on third would steal home.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the play. Well, he was on first. The runner was on third, and he broke for second, and they didn't throw. So the runner stayed on third, and he said, well, I'm going to go back. I'm going to steal first. So on the next pitch, he stole first.
He took a lead heading back to first and stole first.
Yeah, because he wanted to try it again, to try to make him throw to second. And that was legal until about 1919 when they said you can't go backwards.
That's truly amazing.
Yeah.
And I mean, many years later, I mean, the A's loved to run that play with first and third with Ricky Henderson on third. In their case, they'd had the guy on first. He was usually a slow guy. You wouldn't expect to do any running. He'd make him take a horrible fall, and then, would throw over there, and then Ricky scores.
Yeah.
As inventive as going backwards, though. That's remarkable.
He was well known for pranks. If it was, like, raining and stuff like that, he'd go out to the outfield with, a raincoat on. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he was kind of pre-Al Schacht, the clown princes of baseball.
Yes, then he became part of that with a couple of Max Al Schacht and Nick Altrock. So that was Germany Schaefer, the man who stole first base. So that was
good one.
Yeah, that was a good one. All right, so then the Atlantic League made me think of that.
Well, that's I don't know how long that's that's definitely not going to catch on. But I do. I applaud the Atlantic League for. We're throwing some new stuff out there and see what sticks.
I like it. All right. Verlander at the All-Star game, I thought he was very candid talking about the baseballs, and Manfred just did a lot of double talk, I thought, and trying to answer him.
Yeah, I mean, Verlander spoke for so many pitchers that I've seen quoted in recent weeks about, just tell us the truth. We know there's something up, but be transparent. Don't lie to us. If something's up here. It's not the end of the world if you tell us what happened. And you're right, Manfred, he can't really all of a sudden say, okay, we did this and that. It's too late for that. And he also can't say, well, how about we deaden the ball for next season? He can't do that either. He's kind of stuck. And meanwhile, he has to come up with these tepid explanations every time he's asked about it because he doesn't really have any recourse now. But, it's not something baseball would announce. We've tried to liven up the balls for the sake of offense and, for Manfred to say the owners really don't like the home run trend, I just don't think that's true.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. In law, we said res ipsa loquitur. The act speaks for itself. Just go to a ball game. And look, how about last night? The Giants had five home runs last night and scored all their runs on home runs. And last time they did it, other than I think at Coors Field, was in 1947.
Yeah. And it was just one – like stunning development after another. I mean, Longoria, that ball was hit as hard as you can hit it. He's been doing that a little bit lately. Crawford, who's been, you know, tagged for not being able to get around the fastball, he homers off Hader. And, you know, Austin off Hader. I mean, for heaven's sakes, just it's just a, and then Buster Posey, he didn't just hit one out, he hit one to center off the scoreboard. So I didn't even know what was going on there, but it was great to see. I mean, it's you know, especially with the veterans who are being questioned for this or that. You know, here they are mid-season when you'd think they'd be fading even farther, and they're starting to get back a little bit.
Well, I say welcome to baseball 2019, San Francisco Giants. Where you been?
Yeah, they were a little late, but they did join the party, at least for one night.
Yeah, so where does it all go? If you're Farhan Zaidi, what are you thinking about now? As you see what, since June, the notes are out today, since June 1st, I think they're the fourth best record in the league. They're hitting the ball better, their batting average, all the numbers are trending upward. What does it all mean?
Well, it's scary to think they're only 4.5 out of the wild card race, because that's a glaring number. I mean, that tells you that you're in it. I don't think they really believe they're going to get to the postseason with all the other teams in the wild card race. But you know, they want to be respectable, and I think that the trades are going to center around pitching. You know, Bumgarner, Will Smith, maybe Melanson. That's all going to happen. They certainly wouldn't be trading Posey at the break, and I doubt Crawford would be in that argument. You know, really, or Longoria, for a lot of reasons, a lot of them contractual. So I think because they want to, you know, they want to be respectable. They don't want to be horrible anymore. And, you know, they just have to be encouraged. I don't think it really changes their plans at the trading deadline, which is going to revolve around 50.
It's the new lineup coming July 16th.
This is Greg Popoff
on KNDR 680 San Francisco. KSAN HD2 San Mateo. Cumulus.
Stitcher. It'll be better in 2 weeks. I think it will. You talk about Stroman and these other people. They're not Bumgarner when it comes to getting a guy in the playoffs. But the other relievers, if it's Smith, I would move him right away, because you can't take a chance. This is your window of moving people. This is your chance. And, you know, let's say they get to a game of the wild card.
This is Greg Papa, your voice of 49ers football. Papa and Lund, 10-2 on KNDR 60.
San Francisco, KSAN HD2.
Yeah, this is definitely the time for Will Smith. I mean, the All-Star game set aside, he's been just perfect out there. And teams, it's obvious that he can really, really help somebody. I'm not sure about Melanson's value. I always feel like he's going to give up a titanic homer every time he gets out there. But he's been effective, and he has a track record in the past. And Bumgarner, you know, I agree. You see all these other names. Even guys like Greinke and Trevor Bauer, I'd still go for Bumgarner above all these guys who are available.
I would. And so Tony Watson should go, even though we love having him on every other Friday, you know, my philosopher. But they're dying to bring up Sam Selman and Fernando Abad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're dying to bring up Melvin Adone, so Dyson could go. I see the bullpen. That's where I see Farhan making some moves.
Yeah, I saw Selman in the Futures game. He looked pretty good.
I didn't see him. He did? Okay.
Vod was kind of all over the place, and he's not a young guy. He's been around a long time. I don't know what's going on there, but Adone is a very interesting guy who throws like 103 with an interesting breaking pitch. So, you know, he'll be worth a look at some point too.
Yeah, I saw him in the Fall League, and it's legit. You know, and I saw him. Of course, we saw a lot of him in spring training. So he's legit. I haven't seen Selman. I did see Abad in spring training, and he's a guy who has been in the big leagues before, so he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Whether he's got the consistency to do it all the time is another story. So I see things happen. I see things happening there. A couple of anniversaries. Today, I think, was the anniversary of Reggie Jackson's home run in 1971 at the All-Star game that hit the light tower.
Yeah, that was an unbelievable game. For me, maybe the most memorable All-Star game of them all. I mean, of one legendary player after another homering in that game. I think, you know, Frank Robinson, and I think Bench hit one, and it was just on and on. And then Reggie stepped up, and not to be outdone, he puts one up over the roof. I can still hear Kurt Gowdy's call. I think he was stunned that it happened. And, you know, Reggie was a guy. He was a guy for the moment in his prime. You give him a moment like that, and he was a pretty good bet to do something special. That was a really shining episode for him.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, and I saw the video of it this morning because they had it on MLB. And if you look at Doc Ellis's pitch, Bruce, it was right there. I mean, he couldn't have put it in a better spot for. I mean, honestly, it was high, sort of middle part of the play, maybe a little bit to the outside, and Reggie just turned on it and goodbye. That was it.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. You know, Reggie was, when you see him, he's not that big of a guy. He's really well built, but he's not a, you know, an Aaron Judge or anything like that, or a Mark McGwire. He just he was just a pure power hitter. I remember once. In the parking lot of Yankee Stadium, he told a couple of us riders, "It's all in the hips. When your hips go, you won't be a hitter anymore."
That's funny,
but that you turn with your hips, and man, he turned on pitches like nobody's business.
Yeah, you got to see the video. And just now that we're so in tune to the home runs and where the ball is and where the pitch is, when you see where this pitch is, you go, "Uh-oh!" Even before he swings, you know it's going to be it's trouble. So I thought that was pretty good.
I've got that on a DVD somewhere, so I can always call it up if I need to.
Yeah, the other one was, I think yesterday was the anniversary of Disco Demolition Night. Do you remember that?
I do, not with a lot of clarity, other than that it was complete mayhem.
Yeah, Comiskey Park, Bill Veeck, and it was the late 70s, and it was the end of the disco era, or they wanted to get rid of, you know, the disco music and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they invited everyone to bring disco records, and they allowed them to come on the field, and I guess in between games, and they blew up all these records, and the place turned into a bonfire. And they went, where do you see this video?
And complete madness. I mean,
oh, it's crazy.
Not that great of an idea to begin with,
no.
And then it really went wrong.
No, when you tell people you can come on the field and we're going to blow up something, I think at that point there's a red flag.
Yeah,
that tells you this is not a good idea.
Not a good idea.
No. Isn't baseball wonderful?
Well, it really is. I mean, yesterday was such a good example.
Yeah.
Between that Angels game and what the Giants did in Milwaukee. It was just really, you know, it was just special stuff. You absolutely couldn't foresee it. And, you know, not everything is heartwarming and perfect and great, but it's always really fascinating. This has been, every season is great in that way, but this season's been particularly amazing.
And we still got half a year to go.
Well, they say it's all about, you know, the true outcome. I never look at games like that. I never go, this is a walk or a strikeout or, you know, a home run. Yeah. I don't even hear that.
Yeah, there's a lot more to talk about. We'll talk tomorrow morning as well. We've got the Home Run Derby, the All-Star Game to talk about a little bit as well. So have a great night, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good, Marty. Talk then.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. Boy, we could do the whole show. Time now for today's Player Spotlight, sponsored by KIS and Barracuda. Your journey secured. Well, Raf, who do we say, Bumgarner? I mean, that's the story, right? Bumgarner, I mean, you know, he's the lefty. He's been hit on the above the elbow. All the rumors about him. Gives up home runs to righties. Miller Park, maybe the best hitting park in the league. So I'm going to watch him. I'm going to watch Bumgarner tonight. I think he'll tell the story of the game tonight. All right, more.